Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Wednesday, April 13th, 2022. The suspect in Tuesday's mass shooting on the New York City subway, Frank James, taken into custody today, charged under a federal statute that punishes terrorists and other violent attacks on a mass transit system. Texas Governor Greg Abbott announcing an agreement to scale back some of the truck inspections that he's ordered. Inspections that have gridlocked the U.S.-Mexico border for days, backing up cargo for miles. The governor opening one bridge, but not all bridges. He says he's doing this because of President Biden's immigration policies. Governor Abbott also sending a busload of immigrants from Mexico who have been released from federal custody to Washington, D.C. The first arrived today. He says he's doing that as a protest. We'll hear from the governor, plus reaction from Beto O'Rourke, a Democrat running for governor, and the White House. And we'll talk about all this with a reporter with the Texas Tribune. Biden administration says it'll extend the federal mask mandate for airplanes, buses, and trains and other mass transit for 2 more weeks through May 3rd. It was set to expire April 18th. This as there has been a rise of coronavirus cases from the Omicron BA2 subvariant. And President Biden approving $800 million more in military assistance for Ukraine. It's going to include heavy artillery and helicopters as Ukrainian forces are preparing for Russia to concentrate its forces in an assault on the eastern part of the country known as the Donbas. We go to New York City. Frank R. James, that's the man wanted in the shooting of 10 people on a crowded subway in Brooklyn on Tuesday, arrested today in Manhattan. New York City Mayor Eric Adams opening a news conference announcing this arrest. Adams speaking remotely because he's still in isolation after testing positive for COVID-19. After him, you're going to hear from New York City Police Commissioner Keechant Sewell.
We got him. It said to New Yorkers, we want to protect the people of this city and apprehend those who believe they can bring terror to everyday New Yorkers. And I want to thank everyday New Yorkers who called in tips, who responded, who helped those passengers who were injured. 33 shots, but less than 30 hours later, we were able to say, we got him. Thank you, Commissioner, for your leadership and job well done.
And now, Police Commissioner of the City of New York, Keechant Sewell.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for being here. I am truly fortunate to stand here among these extraordinary investigators and federal partners to make this announcement. Moments ago, Frank Robert James was stopped on the street and arrested by members of the New York City Police Department. Officers, in response to a Crime Stoppers tip, stopped Mr. James at 1:42 p.m. at the corner of St. Mark's Place and First Avenue in Manhattan. He was taken into custody without incident and has been transported to an NYPD facility. He will be charged with committing yesterday's appalling crime in Brooklyn. I want to commend all of the investigators and analysts who took part in this all-hands-on-deck investigation. Literally, hundreds of NYPD detectives worked doggedly during the last 30 hours to bring this together. They did so in tandem with a vast number of our law enforcement partners, including those from the FBI-NYPD Joint Terrorism Task Force, the ATF-NYPD Crime Gun Intelligence Center, and the Regional Task Force led by the United States Marshal Service. We hope this arrest brings some solace to the victims and the people of the city of New York. We used every resource at our disposal to gather and process significant evidence that directly links Mr. James to the shooting. We were able to shrink his world quickly. There was nowhere left for him to run.
The New York City Police Commissioner Keechant Sewell, and before that, the mayor, Eric Adams, part of today's news conference, announcing that suspect Frank James has been arrested. He has been charged with a federal terrorism offense. That was announced today by the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of New York. The manhunt for Frank James came when he was identified first as a person of interest and then as a suspect. And that was from what was found at the crime scene. Keys to a van that he rented and the credit card he used to rent it and a 9mm handgun that he had purchased. Also left behind 3 extended magazines, 2 detonated smoke grenades, 2 non-detonated smoke grenades, and a hatchet. And authorities also tracking the purchase of a gas mask to James through an eBay account. Witnesses say that the man who opened fire on Tuesday wore a gas mask. Officials say that Frank James's location was noticed by bystanders who called a police tip line, said that he was in a McDonald's in Manhattan. The police did not find him in the McDonald's, but then searching around the neighborhood did find him. And officials say that he was taken into custody without incident. This is Washington Today. From the Texas Tribune, Governor Greg Abbott and Nuevo León Governor Samuel Alejandro García Sepúlveda announced an agreement they say will help ease commercial traffic at the Laredo-Columbia Bridge, one of at least four international bridges where state troopers have done additional inspections on cargo, causing hour-long delays the past week. After a meeting, the governors announced the deal during a news conference in Laredo, where truckers have been experiencing waits of 3 hours to cross, which is significantly longer than the average wait time of 15 minutes on a Wednesday afternoon. We'll talk with a reporter on that story in a couple of minutes. First, here is Governor Greg Abbott at that joint news conference in Laredo.
2 days ago, we spoke on the telephone about the challenges on the border ranging from clogged bridges to human smuggling. Today, we met to reach an agreement on solutions to those challenges. Border bridges have become clogged because of a policy by Texas to thoroughly inspect vehicles coming from Mexico, whether it be Nuevo León or the other states. These inspections revealed about 25% of the vehicles crossing into Texas were unsafe for Texas roads and were removed from service. At the same time, Texas has been overrun with a record number of illegal immigrants crossing from Mexico into Texas with the assistance of cartels. Well, Governor García and I have reached an agreement today that addresses all of these issues. Governor García has begun and will continue enhanced border security enforcement measures on the Nuevo León side of the border, both at ports of entry and alongside the Rio Grande River, to prevent illegal immigration from Nuevo León into Texas. That increase in border security on the Nuevo León side will continue going forward. And since Nuevo León has increased its security on its side of the border, the Texas Department of Public Safety can return to its previous practice of random searches of vehicles crossing the bridge from Nuevo León. The effect of this will be that the bridge from Nuevo León and Texas will return to normal, effective immediately, right now. It will remain that way as long as Nuevo León executes this historic agreement. My office and the Texas Secretary of State have also been contacted about border issues by all Mexican governors whose states are connected to Texas by bridge. That includes the governors of Tamaulipas, Coahuila, and Chihuahua. As well as my office and the Texas Secretary of State have been contacted by the chief officer for the North American unit at the Mexican Secretariat of Foreign Affairs. I look forward to working with all of them toward achieving results similar to what we are achieving today with Governor García. Until, however, those agreements are reached with those states, the Texas Department of Public Safety will continue to thoroughly inspect vehicles entering into the United States from every Mexican state except Nuevo León. Now, listen, I understand the concerns that businesses have trying to move products across the border, but I also know well the frustration of my fellow Texans and my fellow Americans caused by the Biden administration not securing our border. The ultimate way to end the clogged border is for President Biden to do his job and to secure the border. If you want relief from the clogged border, you need to call President Biden and tell him to maintain the Title 42 expulsion policy that has been in place for years. You need to tell President Biden to aggressively enforce the Remain in Mexico policy. You need to call your member of Congress and insist that they hold the Biden administration accountable. And you need to demand that President Biden enforce the immigration laws that have already been passed by the United States Congress.
More now on Texas Governor Greg Abbott ordering inspections of trucks coming into the U.S. from Mexico. We're joined by Mitchell Furman, an economics reporter with the Texas Tribune. He is in Houston. Thanks for being with us. The governor making some announcement about changes today. What did he say?
He appeared in Laredo with the governor of Nuevo León, the Mexican state, one of the Mexican states south of Texas. And they announced an agreement that they said will help ease commercial traffic at one of the bridges that has been snarled with traffic for days. But there are 13 total commercial crossings between Texas and Mexico. So this agreement that has been reached just impacts one bridge as trade, you know, remains backed up across much of the Texas-Mexico border.
What kind of delays have you found in your reporting, and I guess what kind of pressure is Governor Abbott under?
The delays have ranged from in the Rio Grande Valley in South Texas, across the border in Reynosa. The FAR Reynosa International Bridge is the top produce port of entry in the U.S. from Mexico. And that bridge has been closed all week. Truckers on the Mexico side of that bridge set up a blockade on Monday morning, and no vehicles have crossed that bridge at all, commercial or passenger. And, you know, and that was in protest of the governor's, you know, new inspections that he announced last week for commercial vehicles. And the governor is facing a lot of pressure because these supply chains have been backed up for days. You know, the ripple effects have been swift, and the federal government in Mexico, as well as state governments, have criticized the governor. Business groups and truckers have criticized the governor. The White House today criticized the governor. Or maybe that was yesterday. You know, the agriculture commissioner of Texas, Sid Miller, he also called on the governor to cease this new program.
Why exactly is Governor Abbott doing this? What reasons is he giving, and does he think he can make a difference?
The governor is saying that this is in response to Title 42, which is a pandemic era rule that allows U.S. federal immigration officials to turn away migrants who recently arrived at the U.S.-Mexico border, including those who are seeking asylum. And that is set to lift in the coming – that Title 42 is expected to lift in the coming weeks. And officials are expecting, you know, a lot of migrants to try to cross the border once that rule is lifted. And the governor is hoping that this move will preempt that by putting pressure on the Biden administration to act on immigration issues.
We're talking with Mitchell Furman from the Texas Tribune. Should also mention Governor Abbott is running for re-election. How is this issue playing in the polls?
He just announced it last week, this new program, the inspection program. But also last week, he announced the state of Texas will be busing migrants who cross the border to Washington, D.C., to the U.S. Capitol, you know, kind of as a stunt to show the Biden administration, you know, that these are the issues and you need to fix them as far as, you know, waves of undocumented immigrants crossing the border and overwhelming Texas border towns. You know, Republican voters, the governor is betting, care a lot about issues related to the border. But, you know, he was just asked if this move will backfire, because a lot of people in the business community on the border and elsewhere in Texas are are not happy with this move because their supply chains are snarled. And you know, depending on how long this goes on, there could be changes in costs for buyers and for consumers. You know, there could be shortages of goods, and, you know, the long-term future of the impacts of this inspection program are just incredibly unclear at the moment.
Mitchell Furman covers economics for the Texas Tribune. Find his work at texastribune.org and on Twitter at Mitchell Furman. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
And as mentioned, the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki has been critical of Governor Abbott on the enhanced truck inspections. Jen Psaki asked today about that at today's White House briefing with reporters in Washington, and also about that busload of immigrants. FoxNews.com reports a bus from Texas arrived in Washington, D.C. Wednesday morning, transporting dozens of illegal immigrants as part of Texas Governor Greg Abbott's new plan to counter federal immigration policies during an ongoing border crisis.
The first bus of migrants arrived in D.C. today. Texas Governor Greg Abbott making good on his promise to send migrants to the president's doorstep. I think you previously called it a publicity stunt. Is that still the view of the White House? Can you give us any reaction to this busload of migrants arriving here in D.C.?
Well, these are all migrants who have been processed by CBP and are free to travel, so it's nice the state of Texas is helping them get to their final destination as they await in their outcome of their immigration proceedings. And they're all in immigration proceedings.
And then on your statement this morning, you had mentioned in that statement that the truck inspections have led, that Governor Abbott has been conducting, have led to disruptions for the food and automobile supply chains and rising prices for families. So is the White House blaming Greg Abbott for inflation?
Well, I think we're trying to state the facts of what his another political stunt that we're seeing happen and the impact of it. And what we're seeing is right now, factually, there's over $1 million in trade crossing over the U.S.-Mexico border every minute. These actions are impacting people's jobs and the livelihoods of hardworking families in Texas and across the country. That's not a political statement. That's a statement of fact. I'd also note that what we're seeing with these unnecessary inspections of trucks transiting ports of entry between Texas and Mexico are significant delays, which are resulting in a drop in commercial traffic of up to 60 to 70% in some ports. And that is significantly impacting the local and regional supply chains, to the point that trade associations, officials, and businesses are calling for the Texas governor to reverse this self-inflicted gridlock. I'd also note that CBP officers are very good at their jobs, and Texas DPS does not need to replace CBP at the southern border. CBP has conducted a record number of drug seizures, with more than 900,000 pounds of narcotics seized just in FY 2021. So the economic impact here, something that people of all political stripes are calling for a reversal of, is something that we think is significant and we felt should be shouted out.
The White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki with reporters in the White House briefing room. Beto O'Rourke, a former Democratic congressman and presidential candidate and now running for governor in Texas against Republican Greg Abbott, held his own news conference in Far, Texas on Tuesday.
Through his executive action last week that mandates 100% inspections on all commercial vehicles coming into the U.S. through our ports of entry here in Texas, he has slowed down U.S.-Mexico trade to a standstill. That is causing higher prices. It is causing higher inflation. It is worsening a supply chain problem that we already had in the United States. We're going to lose even more truck drivers who are going to have a hard time making a living when they were used to crossing three or four times a day. Now they're lucky if they cross even once. Someone was just telling me there are some truck drivers who are now crossing once every 3 days. This is going to lead to problems not just here in the Rio Grande Valley, although we have some serious problems here that Greg Abbott has caused, but it's going to be very bad for the Texas economy. It's going to be very bad for the national economy. This is the cost and the consequence of meeting legitimate challenges that we have with the kind of political stunts that Greg Abbott is using right now here in the state of Texas. This is making a challenging situation for small businesses much, much worse.
Beto O'Rourke is running for governor in Texas as a Democrat against Republican Greg Abbott. A news conference in Far Texas on Tuesday. Wall Street today, the Dow up 344, NASDAQ up 272, S&P up 49. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention extending the transportation mask mandate. It was set to expire on April 18th. It's going to be extended for another 15 days until May 3rd. CDC says it's monitoring the spread of the COVID-19 Omicron variant, including the BA2 subvariant. And, quote, since early April, there have been increases in the seven-day moving average of cases in the U.S. in order to assess the potential impact the rise of cases has had on severe disease, including hospitalizations and deaths and healthcare system capacity. The CDC order will remain in place at this time. More on this from the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
On COVID and this extension, this two-week extension of masking on public transportation, can you help us understand some of the science behind this? Why 2 weeks?
Sure.
What difference can be made in such a short amount of time?
Sure. Well, this assessment was made. I know there was a statement that was put out by the CDC and certainly would point to that. But as they're continuing to monitor the spread of BA2, the BA2 subvariant, which now makes up more than 85% of U.S. cases, what they're looking at is that since early April, there's been an increase in the seven-day moving average of the cases in the United States. So what they're trying to do is give a little bit more time to assess its potential impact, the rise of the cases have on severe disease, including hospitalizations and deaths, and the healthcare system capacity. And their assessment from a medical standpoint, a data gathering standpoint, is that 2 weeks would give them some additional time to do that. Now, at the end of that 2 weeks, they can determine what's next after that. But that is that assessment they made so that they could gather more data of the rise of the subvariant.
So should we then expect, and should the public expect, sort of more of these kind of short-term extensions?
It's a good question. I just don't want to make a prediction of that. I think it depends on how they evaluate and assess the data over the course of the next 2 weeks. And they're trying to provide regular, transparent updates to the public.
White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. Number of Republican members of Congress tweeting their opposition to this federal transit mask mandate extension, including this from Congresswoman Lisa McClain of Michigan. The CDC extends the mask mandate for planes but drops the COVID emergency at the southern border. Can they even pretend to be following science these days? Airlines have required masks on planes since early 2020, the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. The Biden administration made them mandatory starting in early 2021. Washington Today continues in a minute. Welcome back to Washington Today, which is available as a podcast. Get it on the free C-SPAN Now mobile video app and wherever you get your podcasts. President Joe Biden putting out a statement today that reads, I just spoke with Ukrainian President Zelensky and shared with him that my administration is authorizing an additional $800 million in weapons, ammunition, and other security assistance to Ukraine. He goes on, the Ukrainian military has used the weapons we are providing to devastating effect. As Russia prepares to intensify its attack in the Donbas region, the United States will continue to provide Ukraine with the opportunities to defend itself. More on which weapons are heading to Ukraine from Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby.
The president announced and authorized another presidential drawdown of security assistance valued at up to an additional $800 million, tailored to meet urgent Ukrainian needs for today's fight as Russian forces shift the focus of their ruthless aggression now to eastern Ukraine. This authorization is the seventh such drawdown of equipment from DoD inventories for Ukraine since August of 2021, and you can see the list of capabilities there up on the screen, so I won't bother reading them all to you. Some of them are reinforcing capabilities that we have already been providing Ukraine, and some of them are new capabilities that we have not provided to Ukraine. All of them are designed to help Ukraine, as we talked about, help Ukraine in the fight that they are in right now, and the fight that they will be in coming days and weeks in the eastern part of the country. The United States has now committed more than $3.2 billion in security assistance to Ukraine since the beginning of the Biden administration, including approximately $2.6 billion since the beginning of their unprovoked invasion on February 24th. The United States also continues to work with its allies and partners to identify and provide Ukraine with additional capabilities, capabilities that aren't in our stocks, that we aren't as able to get to them directly. And we're going to obviously continue to utilize all the available tools at our disposal to support Ukraine's armed forces in the face of Russian aggression. So with that, we'll go to questions. Bob.
Thank you, John. I'm wondering if you could, on the helicopters, are these the helicopters that you had in on stock because they were going to be going to Afghanistan?
Yeah, so these 11 Mi-17s, these had been earmarked for Afghanistan. They are coming out of our stocks, our inventory. We have them. We did obviously transfer them to Afghanistan, so we're now transferring them to Ukraine. I would remind that, as you probably remember, we had already provided Ukraine 5 Mi-17s not long ago. So this is not the first time that we've given them Mi-17s.
Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby with reporters in the Pentagon briefing room. In addition to those helicopters, this new weapons transfer will include artillery systems, artillery rounds, and armored personnel carriers, according to the statement put out by President Biden. Russia's defense ministry saying that more than 1,000 Ukrainian Marines have surrendered in the southern port city of Mariupol, potentially giving Russia control of that strategic city. But Ukraine's defense ministry is saying it has no information about any surrender. As the fighting continues in that southern area and also intensifies in the eastern part, the Donbas, John Kirby asked at the Pentagon whether the U.S. is moving fast enough to provide the military aid.
You continue to lay it all out as for the fight in Donbas, right? I mean, if I'm understanding you correctly. How is it not too late? This is going to take a while to get there. Both the U.S. and Ukraine have known the fight for in the Donbas is coming. How will this not be too late?
We are going to move this as fast as we can, Barb. And I would remind you that it's not like the other material that we've been sending isn't also being used or has been useful in the Donbas. It has been. But in recognition of what the Russians are preparing to do, they're not doing it now. They're not fully up to readiness for this renewed push they want to put in the Donbas. We recognize that, and we're taking advantage of every day, every hour, to get this stuff there as fast as we can.
What is your assessment? Because the administration has been very public. The Russians are resupplying, retrofitting, and moving everything towards the Donbas.
Yeah.
So what's your assessment on how much time you have?
I'm not going to detail that kind of stuff here at the podium. We have a good sense of Russian efforts to resupply and refit and to reinforce. As I just told most, we already have seen that in some cases they are reinforcing now. Look, Barb, I get the, and I appreciate the seriousness of the question. We're aware of the clock. And we know time is not our friend. And that's why, even before this was announced today, we had been moving at very, very fast speed. All the other security assistance that we've been providing, frankly, at an unprecedented rate. And the Secretary has every expectation and has conveyed that expectation to the Department that this material will move with the same sense of alacrity and speed. I would also remind, we're in constant conversations with the Ukrainians. Everything we've been sending is based on conversations with them. And I don't think it's helpful for anybody now, on the 13th of April, to be able to predict perfectly what happens next week. All we can do is do what we're doing in the moment, talking to the Ukrainians, seeing what they need, and moving things as fast as we can.
Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby. CNN reports the European Union on Wednesday approved a further $543 million in military aid for Ukraine, and that brings the EU total allotment to $1.63 billion of aid to help Ukraine defend itself against Russian forces. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky posting a video today describing in detail and with animated graphics the heavy weapons he says his country needs immediately.
Russia launched a full-scale war against Ukraine on February 24th. Now it's April. Russia counted on capturing Ukraine within 5 days. That was the deadline they established for obliterating our country and destroying our democracy. But they had no idea who they were up against. Russia didn't know how much we cherished our freedom. We've been defending ourselves against Russia much longer than they invaders planned. We have destroyed more Russian weapons and military equipment than some armies in Europe currently possess. But this is not enough. Russia still has the capacity to attack, and not only against Ukraine. Poland, Moldova, Romania, and the Baltic states will become the next targets if the freedom of Ukraine falls. The images of Bucha and Mariupol have demonstrated real Russian intentions to the whole world. It could only be stopped by force of arms. It must be done now. Ukraine needs weapon supplies. We need heavy artillery, armed vehicles, air defense systems, and combat aircraft. Anything to repel Russian forces and stop their war crimes. Artillery, 155 millimeters. Artillery shells, 152 millimeters, as many as possible. Multiple launch rocket systems, Grad, Smerch, Tornado, or M142 HIMARS. Armored vehicles, APC, infantry, fighting vehicles, others, tanks, T-72 or similar tanks from the USA or Germany, air defense systems, S-300, Bug or Western equivalents, military aircraft, must have, to deblock our cities and save millions of Ukrainians as well as millions of Europeans. Freedom must be armed better than tyranny. Western countries have everything to make it happen. The final victory over the tyranny and the number of people saved depends on them. Arm Ukraine now to defend freedom.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky posting that video on the social media site Telegram today. Russia responding to President Joe Biden's description of Russian actions in Ukraine as genocide. The president said that twice on Tuesday. Today, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov telling reporters this is hardly acceptable from a president of the United States, a country that has committed well-known crimes in recent times. A new report from an investigative team sanctioned by OSCE, Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, finds there is credible evidence of violations of fundamental human rights in areas of Ukraine largely under Russian control. Report finding evidence of torture, killings, inhuman and degrading treatment of people. It also said it found some evidence of bad behavior by Ukrainian forces, including how it treated prisoners of war, but violations committed by the Russian Federation, the report said, are by far larger in nature and scale. Former U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates giving his assessment today of Russian President Vladimir Putin's strategy and goals so far in this war. Gates interviewed by Aaron David Miller, a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
You wrote in the Financial Times that, as you argue now, that you thought formal reincorporation of the former Soviet Union was not his goal, that it was subservience to Russia, subservience basically to have national influence over two issues. One was democratization, or Ukraine and other former Warsaw Pact countries drifting west. And the other was the security dimension, NATO. After 6 weeks of what we've witnessed, it's clear to much of the world, now maybe we're wrong, it's clear to much of the world that he's not even going to be able to digest Ukraine. I guess the real question is it clear to Vladimir Putin that that is in fact not possible?
I think that question remains open. And I think it's premature to say that he has given up on his aspiration of taking Ukraine entirely. Clearly, his initial approach failed and failed miserably. And a lot of military mistakes were made, an incredible number of military mistakes. But that does not preclude Act Two. And we see that in preparation in the East where it seems clear that his intent is to seize all of the Donbass. The republics of Luhansk and Donetsk really only comprise, I think, about 40% of the whole Donbass. And so he would like to take all of the Donbass and then this land bridge, if you will, between Russia and Ukraine that involves taking the rest of, taking much of the rest of the Black Sea coast, including Mariupol and perhaps, maybe, probably trying to seize Odessa. If he is successful in that arena and the terrain in Eastern Europe, in Eastern Ukraine, is much more compatible with the use of armor, tanks, and so on than the western part of the country, then it seems to me, once he's established himself firmly in those areas, I wouldn't rule out that he then begins again to move to the west until he can at least bring about, force a change of government in Kyiv, just because of the destruction of the country and the paralysis of the country. And so the real issue is the will of the Ukrainian people, because I think this is going to go on for quite some time.
So success will breed success, in other words.
Well, that would certainly be his hope. And the question is, you know, if the Ukrainians can fight him to a stalemate in the east, that would be, I think, an even more significant military achievement than what they've already accomplished, because the Russians are much closer to their supply depots. The Russian army is probably the most railroad-dependent army of any major country. And once they get beyond their own rail depots, more than 50, 60, 70 miles, they begin to have significant logistical issues, because they have many fewer trucks per unit than most other armies. And so one of the problems they had in the West was they got too far out in front of their supply depots. So the question is, how successful can he be in the East? And then does he move on to Odessa and then continue to try and move to the West? And I think that's going to be the real challenge.
Robert Gates was U.S. Defense Secretary 2006 through 11, spanning the presidencies of George W. Bush and Barack Obama. In a virtual discussion today hosted by the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, you can find the full video at our website, cspan.org. Reuters reports that U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen on Wednesday appealed to China to take action to help end Russia's war in Ukraine, warning in a landmark speech that Beijing's standing in the world would suffer if it fails to do so. Yellen spoke at the Atlantic Council.
While many countries have taken a unified stand against Russia's actions, and many companies have quickly and voluntarily severed business relationships with Russia, some countries and companies have not. So let me now say a few words to those countries who are currently sitting on the fence, perhaps seeing an opportunity to gain by preserving their relationship with Russia and backfilling the void left by others. Such motivations are short-sighted. The future of our international order, both for peaceful security and economic prosperity, is at stake. And this is an order that benefits us all. And let's be clear, the unified coalition of sanctioning countries will not be indifferent to actions that undermine the sanctions we have put in place. The war in Ukraine and sanctions against Russia highlight the pivotal role of China. China has long claimed to hold sacrosanct key international principles, including those enshrined in the UN Charter, with respect to sovereignty and territorial integrity. Whatever China's geopolitical aims and strategies, we see no benign interpretation of Russia's invasion, nor of its consequences for the international order. China cannot expect the global community to respect its appeals to the principles of sovereignty and territorial integrity in the future if it does not respect these principles now when it counts. China has recently affirmed a special relationship with Russia. I fervently hope that China will make something positive of this relationship and help to end this war. Going forward, it will be increasingly difficult to separate economic issues from broader considerations of national interest, including national security. The world's attitude towards China and its willingness to embrace further economic integration may well be affected by China's reaction to our call for resolute action on Russia.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen today at the Atlantic Council in Washington, D.C. Associated Press writing about this, that Yellen's speech comes a week before the world's finance ministers and central bank governors convene in Washington for the International Monetary Fund World Bank Group spring meetings. Her direct appeal to China underscores an increasing frustration the U.S. and its allies have with a country that has only deepened its ties with Russia since the invasion of Ukraine. That from AP. Library of Congress releasing today the newest 25 recordings to be included in the National Recording Registry for their cultural, historical, or aesthetic importance in the nation's recorded sound heritage. There are a lot of varied songs on the list, including Journey's Don't Stop Believin' from 1981, Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody from 1995, and Ricky Martin's Livin' La Vida Loca from 1999. Also, It's a Small World, recorded by the Disneyland Boys Choir in the 1960s. Also, a lot of non-musical spoken word recordings. Here's part of a video put out today by the Library of Congress. You're going to hear Librarian of Congress Carla Hayden, also podcaster Mark Macron, who was on this list, and also some reporting from after the terror attack, September 11, 2001, and a speech by former President Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Each year, the registry adds 25 titles to our archives of the nation's most enduring recordings.
It could include hit records, speeches, concerts, news broadcasts, and like coincidentally, this year, my podcast, not coincidentally, they chose it, my podcast with Robin Williams. Which
either they laugh with you or they laugh at you. At some point, you have to be comfortable if they're laughing
at you. You're comfortable with either one.
Looking at the World Trade Center at this moment.
I hate war.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Part of the video with highlights of some of the Library of Congress National Recording Registry editions. The registry began back in 2002 and now has over 600 titles. The selection is chosen by the Library of Congress in consultation with the National Recording Preservation Board and library curators. And also the public can nominate their favorites. You can find out more at loc.gov. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. Get more of Washington's top stories sent right to your inbox each day by subscribing to C-SPAN's evening newsletter word for word at c-span.org/connect. Have a good night.